This is URN Sport.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome along to the Saturday Sports Show here on URN. Delighted to say I'm in the company of Benji, Jez, Joe and Ollie to take you through the afternoon. We'll be addressing some of the big stories in the Premier League and the world of football. And we're going to start by our reflections on the England game last night, England winning 5-0 against the Czech Republic. And it was a really impressive performance by England, wasn't it, Ollie?
Oh, yeah, it was so good. I mean, I was saying to these guys just before the show started, actually, that it's the first time I've gone to the pub excited to watch an England qualifier, I think, in my lifetime, to be honest with you. Like, normally people just don't care about these sorts of games. I mean, under Hodgson and under the management before that, you could just see that game going down the typical 1-0 path, maybe. Like a Harry Kane penalty in the 70th minute, and that would have been that. No one would ever remember the game, but everybody was excited for it. Everyone wanted to see Sancho play, Hudson-Odoi coming on. Everyone wanted to see how Sterling did. Everyone wanted to see if we had the same energy that we did at the World Cup. And I think it's fair to say that we did. We weren't at our best. And I think still coming away with a 5-0 victory when, I mean, I don't even think we hit fifth or sixth gear really in that game. It just goes to show like how far we've come.
Oh, me and Jez were having a conversation outside about the how Southgate has kind of once again refreshed the team for these qualifiers with the likes of Sancho, Hudson-Odoi. Michael Keane was brought back into the squad for last night as well. It's really exciting time to be an England fan, isn't it, Jez, with all these new young players coming in and actually making an impact as well?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, Ollie's touched on two of them there, though, Hudson-Odoi and Sancho. I had the exact same thoughts, Ollie. I was, for the first time in my slightly longer lifetime, I was really pumped for going and watching an England game. I mean, it's the
you're
first
not 50,
time.
50, Jez. You're about a year old.
All right. I feel like, for the first time I felt since really, pretty much in my opinion, the end of the 06 World Cup, in my view, I was actually really, really looking forward to watching the England game. Even during the World Cup, I always had that little bit of doubt and uncertainty. But since the World Cup, this England squad has continued, like we were saying, James, to evolve and adapt. The switch from the 3-5-2 that we sort of played at the World Cup to now a more 4-3-3, which we've seen a lot more. This England squad side has a lot of potential ability, a good ability, and you know, I'm sure we'll probably get onto it, but there are players in this England side which aren't yet getting into it, which could feasibly, you know, be missing pieces. Madison is obviously one which is talked about a lot, but the fact that, you know, we've got Hudson-Odoi coming off the bench, and he was brilliant, to be fair, for the 20-minute cameo he had at the end. I mean, his own goal was comical, to say the least, that he got off Callas, but it was Sancho
for me. Chelsea link, I think.
Yeah. Sancho for me, though, was by far the star. I've never been more excited just when an England player gets onto the ball. Probably, I think, in the whole of my lifetime, I can think of then when Sancho was it. Because every time he had
I completely agree.
He gets around it. I don't know if you saw it all a couple of times. Like, there were those ones where like there were two Czech defenders on him and he just nutmegs one, dances past the other to get the ball and then just backheels it through the other's legs again. He was just playing for fun.
Yeah, I literally just, you wanted him to get the ball and every time he got it, people wanted him to take players on. You knew that he could. I mean, I was watching training highlights of him in the week because some of the things he'd been doing in training
was that him rinsing Maguire?
Yeah, it's just ridiculous, to be honest. It's like, I honestly think outside of Mbappe, he's probably the most exciting player to watch in world football at the minute. I mean, obviously Messi, yeah. Mm. But, you know, other than that, the most exciting youngster to watch in world football. Like, you would watch Dortmund games just to see him play. I mean, I was really excited for the Dortmund-Tottenham game as well for that exact same reason.
Yeah, no, definitely, I agree, because the only other thing was right at the very end of the match when it was him and Hudson-Odoi actually were both over on England's right, they were just, you could very much tell they knew that they were just winding down the clock. They were just doing short 1-2s to each other. The Czechs were just sitting off. They were planning the route back to Prague at that point. But then, literally, Will and I were just saying, you know, you've got like 20 seconds left. Just have a shot, have a pot shot, and, you know, just try and have some fun. But it was sort of, in a way, that professionalism which kind of took over from them. They knew, like, the game's done. There's no point doing anything stupid. Let's just finish this out, which is probably better, because if you had someone that, you know, was a hot-blooded teenager in that, like, for example, you know, like Will and I obviously would have been in that shot where we would have just gone to hell with it, we'll just have a pop shot from here and see what happens. That's actually good to see that they have got that mentality. And then the pair of them, Hudson-Odoi and Sancho, just keeping on them. They, you know, I don't know if any of you guys saw when Hudson-Odoi was announced into the squad alongside Sancho, came out with a big thing that he was really looking forward to playing with him again, because I think I'm right in saying they played with each other in, under 21 level. Mm-hmm. I think they might have been in that very successful England sort of squad. It might have been the under 21s that won the World Cup.
I'll turn to you, Benji, for this one. How much credit does Southgate deserve for not only giving these young players an opportunity within the England team, but we've seen England managers in the past throw young players into the team, you know, go back to Theo Walcott all those years ago, and them not being able to kind of cope under international pressure. Yeah. How much credit does he deserve for creating an environment in which these young players not only feel comfortable, but they're able to perform on the top stage?
It deserves 100% credit. I mean, the team cohesion is absolutely amazing. All the players get on. It looks like they finally look forward to the international break once again. I mean, 10 years ago, that was definitely not the case. I mean, it was just seen as a massive annoyance, interruption to the Premier League. And I feel just the team chemistry, the bonding, these teams, got to say, they play for like Spurs, Man United, rival teams. They're competing against each other, but they're so friendly when it comes to England. And I think Southgate has got this absolutely correct. And I'm really excited to see what he'll do for Euro 2020. Yeah.
We actually discussed a similar point on View from the Stands just now, and I think we all collectively agreed that we'd give him 100% responsibility for England's turnaround in fortunes. And the other thing which I saw in an interview from him a couple of days ago, which really impressed me, is they asked him about the number of injuries they've had in the squad so far, because there's been quite a few, I think. Alexander-Arnold, Rashford, Luke Shaw,
Loftus-Cheek, well.
Quite a few have pulled out, and they asked him, so are you planning on calling anyone else up? And he said, potentially, but if we are, we're going to look to the under-21 squad, because they've been in training all week. And I just think it's nice that he's not really considering anyone else other than these youngsters. He knows that they're good enough. He's put his faith in them, and it's just so pleasing to see.
And it's interesting, because when Southgate was given the job, Joe, one of the biggest criticisms that was being labelled at him was that he was a yes man, he was part of the FA system, and the argument was England needed to appoint someone who was outside of that FA bubble, if you know what I mean. But that appears to be England's biggest strength at the minute, that they've got a manager who knows the infrastructure of the FA, knows the infrastructure of the England squad so well, and he can rely on these under 21 players to come in and make an impact, because he has that understanding. That seems to be his biggest strength, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'd just like to say, I'm not as on the bandwagon as everyone else seems to be. I don't think Gareth Southgate is the messiah, but I think
that, but he sat here wearing a waistcoat.
He is very, very good, as you said, at almost playing off the FA, if that makes sense, in terms of he presents himself in the way in which an FA would like a manager to present themselves. He plicks his players. His players act in a way the FA would like, so they can't really complain from that point of view, whilst also picking really good players, having an okay tactical game plan. I mean, I'm a bit more reserved than everyone else, as I just said, because I think a player like Jadon Sancho, I think even Hodgson probably would have picked him. He's performing at the highest level, and there's not that many other players to choose from. I think he's been lucky in the players that have come about as well, and I think he had no choice but to choose them. Only these injuries have forced players like Callum Hudson-Odoi to come up, otherwise he would have been back in the under-21s. So let's not put the cart before the horse almost, and let's see, can England perform against a solid side, a really good side? Yeah, at the moment we are, I don't know, specialising in absolutely destroying terrible teams in terms of the Czech Republic. Aren't a good team at the World Cup. We didn't face great teams, and the only one we did, we got beat. So I'm not going to say he's the saviour just yet. Let's play a good team. Let's see more. I think more will be shown when we play the Nations League game against Holland. If we get anything from that, play well, then I'll 100% get on the Gareth Southgate bandwagon. But right now, I'm a bit more reserved.
We've got to say this, though. He's a hell more exciting than all the managers we've had.
No, I agree, but I think that's to do with the FA. Yeah.
No, you go on, Ben. Sorry.
No, yeah, so, I mean, obviously you raised the point about our performance against big teams. Yes, in the World Cup, you can't blame us for the cup run we got. We beat the teams that were right in front of us.
We lost to Croatia.
Yeah, but Croatia are a very good team, and I feel that Croatia team is now going to go down and go into a rebuilding process, because this was their last, their generation. Modric is in his 30s. And what I feel right now, the English team is behind France and Belgium, but only just. And the Netherlands are coming back, but I feel we're definitely in that region. I feel that we've finally got it over the Germans and the Spanish, and we would definitely be a hot shot for Euro 2020. That's not me getting too excited.
I see what Joe was saying about, I mean, he's no tactical master. He's not a Pep Guardiola, but I think I think he's had a very similar effect to the one that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's had at Man United, in the fact that, like, yes, his tactics aren't incredible. He might not have a plan B, a plan C, or anything like that, but he's instilled this squad harmony. He's got the players liking each other, which that's what we didn't have with the Golden Generation. We already spoke before about Ferdinand, Lampard, Gerrard. It wasn't the fact that they couldn't play together, it's the fact that they didn't want to play together. There was no efforts made for them to gel with one another.
Yeah, I was going to say, does international football need Pep Guardiola? Do you know what I mean? It kind of requires, because you don't see these players all the time, so you can't implement that complicated or complex tactical structural plan. Of course, you've got to have some kind of nous and structure in place, but is it more about motivation? Is it more about creating an atmosphere? Jez, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it very much can be. I mean, one of the things which I think from one of the more famous interviews that went around the place, the one which BT Sport did with Rio, Gerrard and Lampard, where they explained sort of what had happened within the England camp at that time, which I think might have been one which we've all seen, where basically they say how, you know, it was pretty much a divided one. You'd have the United camp, the Liverpool camp and the Chelsea camp. You wouldn't really have them integrating. And they contrast it with, for example, with Brazil, how Brazilian players often, they really look forward to going on international breaks. They view it as a bit of sort of, you know, a celebration, a party there with their friends. And that's very much the vibe you're now getting with the England camp, in the sense they are enjoying going there. They're enjoying meeting up again. They're enjoying playing again. I mean, one of the things which stood out for me was the fact that Henderson put out on quite a lot of his social media, you know, huge congratulations with him and Sterling. And, you know, the pair of them had a frosty relationship when they were at Liverpool, to say the least. And, you know, obviously it's title rivals, but when they're in England, you do see, and it might be maybe pandering up a bit to the cameras. There is that argument. We don't know what happens possibly in the dressing room. But you do get that impression that they are more friendly. As to if the importance of like having that cohesion, that atmosphere, yeah, I think it is important. I mean, like Ollie said, you know, Solskjaer's really come in at United. He stopped what Mourinho did, which was just singling out individuals for everyone to either pick on or, you know, throw in, or sort of say, oh, we're not doing well, let's blame Luke Shaw again. He's very much come in and gone, no, you're all good players, you've all got potential. I mean, it's debatable as to how many of them do, and I know that Joe's got strong views on the extent that Solskjaer is for a tactician, but he has come in, he's very much put an arm around the shoulder of quite a few of the players, namely Rashford, obviously, is the obvious standout one, and he's said, look, just have some faith in yourself, trust yourselves, and just work together as a team, because you're in this for a long haul and you're going to have to work together. And that's very much, I think, what Southgate's done with quite a few of these England players.
Yeah, but when you draw on the comparison with Solskjaer again, and I think that's a good one in terms of one of the first bounces that we saw was the anti-Mourinho bounce. But Mourinho was there for 2 years. Are we having an anti-every manager since the Italia 90 bounce? And obviously that's going to be quite a high bounce, because every manager since then, maybe Glenn Hoddle slightly different, was absolutely terrible. And so we're effectively saying anyone who's not that, we're praising, like, the Lord Jesus. I mean, I think to be better than Hodgson, Capello, I mean, I don't want to name the other ones. I don't want to remember them. Exact Sven, Jeeps, McLaren. I mean,
McLaren, the worst
one. Oh my.
Yeah, we'll leave that one definitely out there.
So I don't, I think the atmosphere is a good thing to have, but it only gets you so far. There's going to be a ceiling to this atmosphere and motivation period. You know, this is what happens to Alan Pardew. I'm not saying they're the same. He has his motivation period, and then suddenly the team is terrible because he doesn't do tactics, and Southgate hasn't proven himself tactically astute at the under-21 levels, at Middlesbrough, wherever he's been.
It goes back to what James was saying before. I don't think tactically you have to be perfect in international football. Obviously, it counts for something, but I mean, Wales got to the semi-final of the Euros with Chris Coleman as their manager, who then went to Sunderland and got them relegated.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, exactly. But I mean, you look at France before Deschamps came in. And I mean, the reason why they weren't succeeding, they've always had a good squad, is because they couldn't get the players to gel. I mean, the players all hated each other. I mean, we won't go into it, but all that stuff with Valbuena and Benzema. I mean,
plus there was the mutiny of the squad in 2010.
Of course, and I mean, you look at Brazil in 2014; they completely bottled it. I just think that international football is more of a mentality thing above everything else. I mean, that's why Germany didn't do very well, I'd say, at the 2018 World Cup, because I think they got a bit too big for their boots. There was a lot of fallout in the dressing room, all that stuff with Sané being picked as well.
In terms of Germany, no, I'd say it was because he didn't put faith in the young generation.
I completely agree, and I just, it goes back to what you're saying, yes, Southgate isn't perfect. He might only just be better than the people that we've had before. But the fact that finally we've got the same mentality that we saw from Wales just means that I just think the future looks so much brighter than it did before.
I completely agree with you, Oliver. Like, in terms of your, like, whether we need a motivational person, yeah, we do need a motivational person. You don't have to be tactically perfect. As you said, look at Wales.
I think we're essentially just saying, right, just get a great therapist and then you'll be a great national team. There's got to be something, doesn't there?
No, because we've had the players. We've always had the players. We've always had a top six, top seven, at least a top eight squad in the world. But we've never... I mean, for the most part, for about 6 or 7 years, for 3 major tournaments in a row, we didn't even reach the quarterfinals.
So what is it about Hodgson and the rest? Is it that they just overthink things? Is it that they're just mean?
It's because he was boring. No one...
You need a young...
Yeah, they're boring. These younger blokes that were coming in, they were playing with 34, 35-year-olds and they were being trained by Roy Hodgson. I mean, they want to have a bit of a laugh. I mean, Southgate's having a laugh with the boys in the dressing room. He's got them doing stuff. He's got them going out on socials and things like that. You saw over the World Cup. I mean, yes, it was... No, but like, you see what I mean? I mean, whilst the World Cup was on, it wasn't just that we were winning and stuff. What about all the stuff that happened behind the scenes with Jesse Lingard and Harry Maguire on the inflatable horses and everything? Like,
yeah. The one thing which Southgate does have to an advantage is, I know we were saying, for example, with international football, it is fundamentally different to club football because you aren't seeing these guys week in, week out. You know, they'll go off back to their own respective clubs and then you get them, you know, 2 months later, they'll then pop back to you and you've then got to sort them out. For Southgate, one advantage he does have is because he knew quite a few of them, I mean, it's the line which I know gets tossed a fair bit, but there is reason why when people said he was their under 21 coach, he did know some of them. He has got to know them so he can form that sort of connection with them. But if we're saying, you know, does international football need like a Pep Guardiola? Now, bear with me with this. There is reason why I'm throwing this example in here, but England's probably counter to this will say, well, we got a top level tactical manager when we got Fabio Capello in, mm-hmm. and Capello was so much of a, I'm a tactician, this is how I'm going to set you up. You know, he'd partly revolutionised AC Milan when he'd taken them over, and he'd done a little bit the same when he'd briefly taken over at Real Madrid. When he goes into England, he goes in with that club manager mindset, and it doesn't work. Southgate, probably because he's been in international football a bit longer, knows more the fact I'm only going to see these guys for a bit. I've got to kind of very quickly establish that camp mentality, get everyone on the same page, everyone sort of working to the same crib sheet, whilst, you know, Capello gets them in and he's very much like, right, you're my best starting 11, I'm going to start you every single time, and then the rest of you, your squad players, you'll do. And that's why it causes disgruntlement and breakup within the camp, because you don't look at it in that regard. At least with Southgate, he does understand that, like, I've got to keep everyone involved, everyone to an extent feeling like they are part of this and buying into this sort of almost siege mentality.
And
I was just going to say on that point, Jez, I remember listening to an interview with Kevin Keegan, and he doesn't really like talking about his time as England manager, but they asked him about his reflections on it, and he said, just linking to your club manager becoming an international manager, he said he hated it because he'd see the players for 2 weeks every 4 or 5 months or so, and then they'd go away. And he said that just when he thought he was beginning to implement like a positive plan, or he felt like he'd established a good atmosphere around the players would leave again. Whereas Southgate knows how to kind of maximise the time that he's got available because of his experience in the under-23s and 21 level.
Yeah, no, I mean, Southgate is also probably helped by the fact that the Premier League has gotten better since then, in the sense you have more clubs being competitive than just the standard top four or top three or whichever area you're pointing at. You've now got more clubs that are competitive, you've got more high-caliber managers, more different systems that are being introduced to these players, so they're all becoming a bit more attuned to working in a different setup. For example, you know, 10 years ago, if you'd said to John Henson, you're going to now work in a central midfield block and press the line every time it has it, he'd probably look at you completely dumbfounded and say, no, I want to pass the ball from left to right. I mean, he still does that, but at least now you see him off the ball. He is moving to try and cut down passing lanes, and he's working a lot different how he does. That's because of the fact, in a way, initially with Rodgers failing to implement that, but you then have Klopp coming in going, right, just, you know, teach them how to do it. Guardiola is doing that with the City players. Look at what he's done with Sterling, for example. You know, since last night, I had a look this morning on Twitter and lots of different social media, and Sterling, everyone is saying now he's, because of how he performed last night against a bit of a mediocre team that I think could be turned over, but how he's been performing the last few weeks up till then, everyone's saying he's in that category of sort of, you know, the top level wingers. outside, obviously, you know, the god tier that is Ronaldo and Messi, you know, he's in that sort of next bracket down. And to be perfectly honest, you know, if you're trying to think of high caliber wingers that are best than him, I can think of one or two, but it isn't as easy as it was, you know, 5 years ago.
And that is obviously the Guardiola effect. And I think it's important to consider, you obviously gave him as the example of the perfect tactical manager, but he is one of a kind. I mean, he could get the URN hangovers to win the Premier League. He is that good. But at the same time, let's say that Guardiola was in charge of England. He obviously wants to play in a certain tactical way. He can't do what he does with Manchester City. He couldn't look at Jordan Pickford and go, look, I don't think you're a good enough sweeper keeper. I don't think you're good enough on the ball. I want to sign Edison. No, it doesn't work like that. You've got to use what you've got. If he didn't have good enough ball playing centre backs to play in that manner, he couldn't play the high press game with the players that we've got. There's nothing much he can do. You can be a tactical expert, you could play the Maurizio Sarri way. He could come in and try and instill his philosophy
and get Jorginho.
But if you don't have the players, then there's not a lot you can do. And that sort of more reinforces my point that you've got to work with what you've got. It's a mentality thing. It's not necessarily a tactical thing. Yes, of course, you've got to set up in different ways depending on the opposition. If England are playing weaker opposition, I would prefer if we played with one holding midfielder as opposed to two. I would have actually preferred him to start with just Henderson or just Dyer or even just Rice last night, as opposed to playing both of them. And he actually, the thing which was quite pleasing was he corrected that after 20 minutes when Dyer went off injured. He didn't immediately bring on Rice. He actually brought on Barkley, who I thought had his best game in an England shirt ever, I think. That was very pleasing to see. But yeah, there's obviously some tactical things you can do. You can play different formations and stuff like that. But for the most part, I mean, I think Southgate's done all that he can. And yeah, I keep saying it, but I'm just so, so excited.
And another thing that I think is important in managers of national teams, they have to be of that nationality. I feel with Southgate, the fact he's English and like he understands it, it's really, really important. I mean, we went back to the days of Capello. I mean, would Capello be able to infuse the English players? Not really.
I barely speak English, so I don't really know
I'm inclined to agree, especially because, I mean, most of these England players do only speak English. I mean, with a lot of other countries, I mean, in most other countries, they can speak their native language. In most countries, they can speak English as well. A lot of them can speak Spanish. So having a foreign manager might not make as much of a difference. But in England, with these youngsters who, let's just say, might not be the smartest in the world, having a British manager who they can relate to, I do think counts for quite a lot.
Another thing is that France, even, they weren't tactically perfect in the World Cup. They conceded 3 goals to Argentina. They conceded 2 goals to Croatia in the final. I mean, I know one of them was a Lloris error, but were they flawless? No, they weren't. Like, I mean, it just goes to show that, these players are, like, I think as long as there's good cohesion, and that's what really counts. It's not about being like Guardiola, heavy metal, Klopp football, whatever. You just need a manager who's able to get these group of players that play in different teams together.
Yeah, I think to be fair, you guys have actually done a really good job, because I'm more convinced now than I was before. I'm not on the Gareth Southgate train quite yet, but I was just literally thinking about the last games and like the Croatia game. So unlucky. Like, another day, England would have won that, and then Southgate is suddenly an absolute hero. And, like, against Holland, I don't know if we're necessarily expected to win. We can only got the best players.
As an Arsenal fan, I'd just like to say that Kane should have passed it to Sterling, and we would have been in this final.
True. I think that's true. I don't know.
But if he passed it to Welbeck, he still would have missed it.
God. Oh, not this again.
No.
But the thing I don't like to think, this almost makes me think about, I don't know how to phrase this without it seeming really stupid, but it almost seems like once you do this, you pick the players, and then as long as they're happy, it's basically a lottery of who wins when you get on the pitch. Whoever the better players are, and whoever's happier when they get on the pitch, they win. But is that necessarily happen every time?
It sounds stupid, but kind of.
The happier team wins.
Not happier, that's the wrong word.
It's the mental side
of things. It's like team cohesion, isn't it? It's who wants it more. I mean, you've seen it in the Premier League as well. I mean, Liverpool at the start of the season wanted it more. I mean, but we've seen in recent weeks they've kind of bottled it. We've seen Manchester City, I mean, when they think that I mean, almost when they think the results are given against sides like Newcastle and stuff, you haven't seen them up for it. I think it's probably a better example using sort of these mid-table teams like West Ham and like, I know you can probably relate as an Everton fan. You see performances with them. I mean, the Everton game against Liverpool, you could see how much they wanted it. The players had a spring in their step. They had more energy. They were playing for each other. But then the week after that, it's a completely different team. And it's hard to understand why, but it's about which manager can get which manager can keep the team playing in the same way, keep that mentality, keep that team cohesion going. It's a hard one.
No,
it's
similar
to Joe. It's really hard to put into words.
Yeah. It's like basically getting them up
I do actually agree. I think that's a lot tougher job than I think people make out to be. In my mind, because I'm an idiot, I think, oh, I could go in there. I could have a few bebs with the boys. I could get them, you know, I could get them up and coming. But I imagine that is a lot tougher. There are some huge personalities in there. I can't imagine. Jadon Sancho is, what, an 18, 19-year-old kid, basically, who's suddenly been given loads and loads of money. He's obviously going to be quite big-headed. This is Gareth Southgate's opportunity not to just... those kind of players are the players that would have just gone off the rails with earlier managers, whereas Gareth Southgate has not only talked to them, sort of deflated their heads almost, he protected the players in a way that I don't think Hodgson ever would. Hodgson would never have defended Raheem Sterling in the way that Gareth Southgate has. So I do give him credit for those things. So, you know what? I'm on the Gareth Southgate bandwagon now.
Convince you.
You actually have genuinely convinced me, because I haven't been thinking about it all that much, because in fact, I got a message from my dad asking, are you going to watch it? I said, no, I only watch one frustratingly underachieving team in Liverpool. So
didn't know you supported Everton.
But they're not frustratingly underachieving anymore, apparently. So I'm getting back on the bandwagon.
I think the best example, just going... back to Ollie's point of team and Joe's about the happier team wins, if you know what I mean, and about team spirit. An example of that, and a team which have lost that this season in the Premier League would probably be someone like Burnley. So, for example, last year, multiple times I'd be watching Burnley and thinking, how are they staying in this game? Because some of the football they were playing was dire. Some of the players on paper, quality-wise, as opposed to their opposition, you'd be like, there's no competition here. The opponent are so much better than them, yet they'd still grind out results and grind out points here and there, which got them to Europa League qualification. And now this season, as that team spirit is slowly starting to erode, kind of the quality of their team is being found out a little bit. So I do buy into that point. I think it's really important about the atmosphere and the environment that managers create at a club.
Surely there is a ceiling to this, though, in terms of... Germany could be like, they could all be really sad, like badly motivated, and they could play against a Cyprus team that were absolutely up for it. But Cyprus aren't going to walk them over, they're not going to beat them. So I'm saying,
not necessarily. So you look at Korea,
I was
Korea
thinking
that.
It can keep you competitive in a game.
Yeah, you can keep you competitive, but there's got to be a different element that really gets you over the line.
And that's what the top teams have got.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I don't know if Gareth Southgate has that extra little bit of... I don't even know what it is.
But we're not a Cyprus. We are already a Germany, essentially. I mean, they might have the slightly better squad than us at the minute. They always seem to be that bit above us. But for the most part, we're one of the best teams in the world. If we can motivate them, why can't we win everything?
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Why can't we win everything?
We're going to win the Euros. I'm calling it now. On the show, we are going to win Euro 2020.
Well, unfortunately, it's recording, so I will take that and career.
I'm going to say France again. I'm sorry. I can't. Their team is so stacked.
Well, they lost to Portugal in the last final, and Portugal finished third in the group.
Conversation here.
True. But it's just like, I don't rate our midfield or our defence enough.
I was going to say just one final question about England is what aspects of this England team do you still have limitations or question marks about, and are there any players that because me and Jez were having a conversation outside about James Maddison, are there any players who aren't currently part of that England squad who you think deserve to get a place?
I think the places that we need to improve upon are, we need a better centre back to go alongside Stones. I don't think Maguire is of good enough quality.
Joe Gomez.
I think he could be. Exactly. I don't think. Okay, you know what? I'm not going to say on Pickford. I think he could improve massively. I think he's been down form. We're still missing that creativity, I think, in the middle of the park. I still don't see it. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain might be able to do it if he keeps fit. I think James Maddison might be able to do it if he keeps up the solid form. But right now, the creative midfielder is definitely something that we really, really need. And if Joe Gomez can stay fit, then fair enough.
As far as centre-backs go, I feel he was having an amazing season until... I mean, he is part of a crappy Arsenal defence, but Rob Holding, I mean,
I'm not accepting that as a solution. Rob Holding is not an answer. Callum Chambers for England, people. No, this is ridiculous. Cut him off. No, this is ridiculous.
Yes,
you know what? There's that Carl Jenkinson bloke at right back.
I've heard of him. He's up and coming, Carl Jenkinson.
Okay, I don't know any West Ham players. You're too relevant. So I can.
I mean, Declan Rice was England debut last night, didn't he?
But Joe Gomez, I mean, he did play amazingly with Van Dijk, then got injured. But, like, could he bring it to England?
I feel like playing with Van Dijk, you're always going to look miles better than you actually are. So I think...
I agree with what Joe said until I started watching quite a few Liverpool games, and I do think he's fantastic. I think Stones is phenomenal as well.
No, I did actually forget about Gomez, so that is my bad. But I'm going to say that. Goalkeeper, if Pickford still... has this like short arm syndrome that he seems to have at the moment, where he has absolute nightmares.
He says he's not playing badly though. Did you see the interview?
Well, of course he's not.
He's not going to.
But you know, I think isn't a guy called Gunn coming through?
Funnily enough, he's on my list.
He's supposed to be quite good. Yeah. If he can turn it around.
Have you done a list?
I did actually when I was bored.
Have you got Jamal Lascelles on there?
Lingard is making that.
When I was, I'll explain it. Right. So this was in my thought. I did this because it's also it means that England can play in the various different setups for. It, which is something which I think we do need. We've said, like, you know, the tactical aspects of it, fine, don't always matter. But I think we saw in the World Cup, when we just dependent on one system, it doesn't always work. So we need to be able to chop and change a little bit. So the three keepers I went for, this could be a source of contention for it. Yes, I put Pickford in. I did have Angus Gunn in because he's been pressed me quite a lot since Hasenhüttl's come in. He's been the starter for Hasenhüttl and he's actually been pretty good in the United game, which I was watching on this show. He was very impressive in that match. And Butland is my third one.
But, so Nick Pope, as soon as he's out of the Burnley side, he's basically out of contention. If he makes a move to a decent side, I think he could be in contention. I am slightly thinking
ahead for, like, if this is the squad I was taking to 2020. I don't know with Heaton, like, could he take, like, Heaton probably in my mind would be ahead of Butland if I did come down to it. This was one which I was literally like, I had Pickford and Gunn, and I wasn't sure about who the third was going to be. It was either Butland, Heaton, or Pope, because Joe Hart can honestly go out the window. He's done, he's finished.
He's the choice keeper at Burnley now.
I know, it's jokes. So those are my three for keepers. Then defence, now I'll explain sort of why I've done this. I've got Wan-Bissaka, obviously, Alexander-Arnold.
Agree.
Walker.
No, I don't agree with Wan-Bissaka.
He's been absolutely insane this season.
Yeah, he's been good for a mid-table Palace team. Yeah,
Ollie.
He has a 94%
interception rate, which is the highest in all of Europe.
But he's the third best right back in England.
That's freakishly high.
He's the third best right back in England.
Sawyer Walker's one of the best. If we're looking at like someone that's the master of interception, we're looking at
Alexander Arnold.
No, I agree with. I've got Walker and Alexander-Arnold in there because the thing is with Alexander-Arnold is he can play in the midfield as well. So I'm thinking system-wise, Wan-Bissaka is a better out-and-out defender than those two because Walker doesn't know what defending is at half the time and Trent does get caught out at times. So like, if I'm thinking out-and-out defender, I've got to lock down that. I am going Wan-Bissaka.
Have you completely been Trippier then? He's been awful this season.
Like, that's not what
one free kick, which for a brief bit made everyone sort of go completely mental.
I think he's allowed to live off that free kick.
Yeah. I'm not saying that he shouldn't necessarily be in it. I just wouldn't have put... The way you described it there is like, oh yeah, no, he'll be an absolute shoe-in. And I think there's obviously two that are still...
He's in the squad. His interception rate is insane. Okay, yeah. At the minute, I suppose...
I'd rather
have
minute,
him than Bellerin right now.
But I mean, what if Trippier has a good season next year?
Like, I mean, yeah,
he was one of England's World Cup heroes.
If you said to me at the end of this season, pick your starting 11.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm right.
And it's also a little bit on trajectory.
I think Trippier centre forward would be a good.
Maybe like have him as like number 10 or something.
What's the set piece?
Well, I've got, so sorry, Wan-Bissaka, Trent, and Walker. Then I've got Gomez, Stones, and Maguire, Short, and Chilwell. So I've only really, in theory, got three centre backs. But I have got Walker can shift there if I'm going to three at the back. And you don't need that
many sets. I'm probably going to like that would come back to bite me on the arse.
We'll get
it?
Two injuries. We'll get, and then it'll be Maguire.
We're just doomed.
Own,
yeah, we're just doomed. And then, yeah, Shaw and Chilwell, I think, are the two best left backs that he has. Yeah. So there's no argument for that. Midfield, and this was another bit of contention. Right, I've got Rice straight
you,
in. So Ollie's happy with that. I have got Maddison as well. This is like just I picked the players. Ali. I've got in there. Now, to explain why for Joe I've put Lingard in there, it's because I'm thinking, well, a backup right winger as well,
no,
if I need that.
I love Lingard. I don't
and
know can, why. I just
and
do.
He's got a good Lingard, but he does get into that team. Obviously.
I mean, I despise the man, but I would regressively go. Well, I wasn't. It depends if he's fit or not. I mean, that's the thing.
Ward
I would go.
Prowse,
well, I'd
sorry,
go.
I'm jumping the gun, but
yeah,
Ward
Joe,
Prowse.
You're spoiling it. Come on.
Okay.
See how Ox comes back.
Yeah, I mean, if Ox comes back, I put him in ahead of probably a Ward-Prowse or a Loftus-Cheek because they're my next two down, because I think one of those two like my fringe ones for it. If Ox is back and firing, he's in ahead of those two, yeah, and the other one is Henderson, because you sort of need that guy to tick over the midfield.
No
times.
Dyer.
No, I like that. I don't
Dyer
like that.
Is an absolute diabolical.
He's shocking, yeah. He's shocking.
Player.
No, I agree, he's shocking.
Yeah, right. Rice in my mind just jumps ahead of him straight away in the pecking order. So if Ox is fit, he probably comes in ahead of probably Loftus-Cheek, to be honest, and then Ward-Prowse in there, dependent on Ward-Prowse or Loftus-Cheek fighting that last space in my midfield. Front line pretty much picks itself in terms of who my attackers are. Kane, Rashford, Sterling, Sancho and Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. No, Welbeck, thank God. Get him out.
Do you think Harry Winks could make a lane?
I would put Harry Winks in there.
What?
No, okay, instead of joking.
I could admit
yeah, I'm going to stir up some debate.
But, like, Harry Winks is good. I don't know what you...
Yeah, but
do
instead
not,
of
like,
who?
Well, okay, hang on.
I actually don't think you've got enough... central midfielders in there, and the other one which I would throw in there, which I mean two years ago if I'd heard myself say this, I would have thought I was stupid, but Delph.
Yeah,
I just think he's so versatile.
Ross Barkley.
He's almost like I don't know.
Where's Barkley?
He's not in my list, obviously. I think he's
better than Ward-Prowse.
I think Delph is the closest thing we can get to that versatile Milner type. Versatile. And obviously, we can't have Milner anywhere.
No, I agree with this. Is the thing like this? Is the point? England's midfield. Whilst we're saying there isn't the problem is the shoe-ins for it. In my opinion, or the ones we kind of need. We do need hopefully that Madison gut. Type because Maddison has been has created the most number of chances in the Premier League of any English player, so he sort of automatically fits in for me for that. And then Rice, yes, because like he is an up and coming talent, and if we need a young CDM for the future, he is what Dyer was sort of meant to be 5 years ago. He's picked that up, and I know we're then looking at sort of some of the other positions. I mean, the problem is it's then difficult because you then got to work out you are in the end only taking a 23 man squad, so that's why I was not sure. I had forgotten about Ox, that was why I left him out. But he would then get in for me probably ahead of Ward-Prowse, and then it's then a question of, you know, does Barkley then get in ahead of Loftus-Cheek?
It's a really big season for that midfield, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know for that, because I think, you know, Loftus-Cheek at the World Cup, when he came on, there were comparisons, a bit premature comparisons, like how Ballack would drive that midfield forward to Germany in the past, and that's what Loftus-Cheek did. Barkley, like we said, last night was possibly his best England game, and his first highlight was when he comes on the pitch, he shoves a blooming Czech player into the hoardings. Yeah.
I've got two more names which I want to throw into the mix, playing for the under-21s, and not necessarily there yet. I'm not saying that... I think it's right that they're not in the squad at the minute, but I think if they have good years next year, they're definitely going to be strong contenders. The first is Phil Foden.
Ooh. Yeah.
Obviously he's not getting that much game time at City, but every time we've seen him, he's been fantastic. And, I mean, he runs the under-21s. If you watch any of their games or any of their highlights...
Pogba is for France, really.
Exactly. And then the second one is another under-21. Another one who's playing in the Bundesliga at the minute is Reece Nelson.
I was going to mention that, but yeah, I was worried you were going to say his
arm. You explain then.
He's really young. I mean, like, I think Euro 2020 could come too soon for him. Plus, he's having a few disciplinary issues at Hoffenheim and have been like dropped. But but to be honest, like, he's definitely one for the future. I think 2020 might come too soon for him. And if you see the players on that list, I think Nelson is one to watch for maybe Qatar, but not this.
Yeah, looking at another Arsenal player, not for 2020 because he's not already. I think Maitland-Niles.
Maitland-Niles
is a really. If he's actually played in his right position, then I think he could be really, really good.
I think the right back position is just good. There's so many
so
shortages.
Strong, yeah.
And Bellerin's injured. I feel he's going to have to try and make that his own. It's not ideal, but it's a shame. But I think he's now committed to it in an interview. I say we bring back Mark Noble.
It's refreshing, though, isn't it?
Has he never?
Has Mario
He's never had a cap.
It's refreshing, though, isn't it, that we're having a debate over the England squad, and whereas in previous years it's kind of been a given who's getting in. Now we're having a debate, and it's not over just kind of like your bog standard 28 year old kind of
Jack Wilshere,
of this world. It's over exciting young players. So I think the conclusion we can take from this conversation is it's coming home again.
Oh, definitely.
In Ollie's mind, it's already coming.
Oh, definitely. Because it's not. Beforehand, it was, oh no, he's not good enough to play. Whereas now, it's, oh yeah, no, he's good, but he's not as good as what we've already got, sort of thing. And that's really pleasing.
Actually, one thing which can sort of testify to how this transformation really. I mean, the World Cup obviously helped and it galvanised a lot of fame, but also how we've seen this England team push on since. If anyone listening like scrolls back to finding our World Cup prediction special, you'll find on there, and Ollie can testify that from being on there, how cynical of England I was. I was probably definitely where Joe was, if not a little bit more, saying this is going to be, you know, appalling, we're going to do abysmally. And I was very glad at the end of the World Cup that I was proven completely wrong. And it's more, I've since seen them, when you're looking at this squad, there is the young talent, and also it's just the fact that they don't play looking like the fact of, we've got to be here, this is annoying. It's more like we're playing here and we're having fun playing it.
That was the same World Cup special where we all five of us predicted Germany.
And we predicted that Leroy Sané would win the Young Player of the Tournament. Oh my God. This was before the squads were announced. We should clear our own back on that. I mean, I'm having a torrid time with predictions at the moment.
I mean, I wasn't at URN, but I'll just gladly take the credit for
saying
that
right,
France won the World Cup.
You got it right.
That's convenient, isn't he? Yeah.
I have predictions on my laptop. I'll get it out.
On campus
and online.
This is
URN.
Welcome back to the Saturday Sports Show here on URN. We've had a chat about all things England after a fantastic win for the Three Lions last night. Now we're going to reflect upon the FA Cup quarterfinals last weekend, where Wolves, Watford, Brighton and Manchester City made their way to Wembley. The semi-final draws are in as well. Wolves will be taking on the Hornets at Wembley, whereas Brighton will be playing Manchester City, who are still pushing for that famous quadruple. I just want to talk first and foremost about Manchester City's win at Swansea last weekend. Obviously found themselves 2-0 down to the Championship side Swansea, but came back to win 3-2. Benji, that's a real illustration of the kind of character and belief that is in that City squad, isn't it? I know they got a bit fortunate about with the goal at the end.
Yeah.
But
a bit.
I mean, they got offside and what was the other one?
Wasn't a foul.
Okay.
Wasn't a foul.
Okay. No, it does... Well, okay, I'll be a fool not to say it doesn't show their character. I mean, even at 2-0, I was unsure that Swansea would go on and win it. But like, it just shows maybe there are a bit of nerves in the City side as you go to the final run up of the season. They've got obviously. I mean, games like West Ham where they won 1-0 and it wasn't even comfortable.
Wasn't a penalty either.
I think Pellegrini just personally awarded the game to them because he wants them to win the league. But,
I was just going to say, I've been going to tell people this until they start actually listening to me. City aren't as good as people say. They beat teams before they get on the pitch. And Swansea didn't want to accept that and they gave them a good go. And then City got really lucky.
Come on. Is that what you keep telling yourself?
No, they have periods
feeling the pressure of the
They have periods.
Come on, boys, they're not that good.
They have periods in the game where they switch off. Saw that against Arsenal. We've seen that against multiple teams this season.
Arsenal got beaten.
They did get a handball goal, but we were never going to win. They were absolutely shaken, and they have that every single game. They had it against Palace, they had it against Leicester, and they get punished for it. But then they use their quality to come back. They can't do that every time. They haven't done it every time.
I was going to... just on that point, both to Joe and Jez, two Liverpool fans, City's comeback against Swansea last weekend, does that encourage you more... for the title race, in the sense that City found themselves 2-0 down in a really tricky place against what is a mediocre Championship team. So the idea is they'll come up against a lot harder Premier League team between now and the end of the season, who could provide them similar problems and be a little bit more defensively solid. So it's going to be harder for City to get back in the game. Or does it make you worry even more for City to come back from that position and the fact that they look like they're not going to give up on this quadruple, they're going to keep pushing for it?
That whole tie actually filled me with quite a lot of encouragement, actually. I mean, to be fair, what's the name, is it? Something Potter, I can't remember the Swansea manager.
Graham Potter.
Graham Potter, afterwards. He was very gracious in his press conference afterwards, because you could tell Swansea were unlucky. There was that, you know, I think the penalty cannon back off the goalkeeper and then went in. There was the questionable decision. So, this whole thing about the VARs, just very quickly to address this with the Swansea thing. Apparently, it wasn't issued because they weren't a Premier League team. And I think the FA said for regularity's sake.
The same against Millwall.
They said for regularity's sake, only Premier League clubs should have it. I'm sorry, Swansea were in the Premier League last season.
They had it in the FA Cup last year.
Yeah, their stadium hasn't suddenly fallen to pieces to the point where you can't have VAR there. It was absolute rubbish.
And then the Man United Wolves game had it 2 hours later. Mental.
Basically, Swansea were shafted because of that in that game. They were really unlucky that did not happen. And fair play to Potter afterwards. He was very gracious in the afterwards, saying, "No, we know that they were a strong team, but we gave it our all and we did well." And like Joe's saying, that mentality, it is something which you do see as an aspect. A lot of teams, when they're going out to play City, it's very much a case of, oh my God, we are playing Man City, and it's the nerves which hit them. But City do go into like that 10-minute cruising period where it's like, we'll just pass the ball around, we know we're going to win this, just it's going to be fine. And then if they get hit in that period, like Palace did to them, like Leicester did to them, you suddenly see the City players, suddenly the dawning of realisation, like, oh, we might have made a bit of a mess here. That tie, though, just very quickly, the reason it gave me confidence is because if teams do go out like Swansea did and don't have, you know, what Joe's saying, you know, that aspect of, you know, that almost fear of facing Man City, and they go out and actually take the game to Man City and really test them, then it shows that City have to respond. And City did respond to their credit, but consequently they had to throw more assets at it than I think Pep Guardiola wanted to. And they've now got themselves deeper into the FA Cup, which means there's another game for them to play, which if you're a Liverpool fan is better, because you're seeing the City squad become overextended more and more and more. And it's more the fact that we know Pep has an ego the size of the country, so he's obviously going to be, of all else, he's going to be chasing that quadruple more than anything. So he's going to just keep sort of stretching his resources thinner and thinner until he's going to look at the Premier League and like, I can maybe sacrifice a game here if I'm going to win the Champions League. That's my opinion for it, which is why I'm quite happy at the way that the FA Cup is possibly lining up, because I think it's possibly could help Liverpool out quite a bit.
Well, I think defensively, City aren't...
Sorry for going out from a purely Liverpool POV.
I completely agree. I think defensively, City aren't as good as people say they are. I don't think their back four isn't that great. Walker on one at the right back, I don't think is defensively a liability.
I think
Zinchenko at left back.
Walker's the best right back in the world.
No, defensively,
this season
not.
He has dropped a bit, but
Laporte and Otamendi.
Yes, he has. Come on, yes, he has.
Laporte and Otamendi are really good because they don't have to do anything.
Exactly, that's the point. They don't have to do anything.
They don't do anything.
Otamendi is personally useless. Laporte and Stones are probably their best centre back pairing.
And they don't do anything. How are we supposed to say they're amazing? They don't. Nobody attacks them. So how are we supposed to know whether they're any good? Actually,
well, they're obviously quite good if no one gets a chance to attack them.
Well, they're not doing. It's just because the team don't go out, they dominate the midfield and they win the ball back from midfield. So they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
So how are they quality because of that?
My main question with City is just like, they've got two games against the top six remaining. Spurs at home, which is winnable, but like, I mean, we'll see how the Champions League tie goes now. But the United away one, I mean, it's obvious to say, but I do feel if United did lose that game to City, then I feel City would have that sort of urge to just go on and win the tie. But if City do slip up, and bearing in mind they are 1 point ahead, and Liverpool's, I'd rather have Liverpool's running at this stage with Chelsea and Spurs at home. I feel Liverpool would definitely have the title in their hands.
Oh God, that's jinxed it.
You mentioned United there, Benji. They were also involved in another quarterfinal at the weekend. They went to Wolves at Molineux and lost 2-1 in what was probably the poorest United performance under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. What were our thoughts on that United display? Because that's probably, you would say, their best chance at silverware this season. Obviously, if Solskjaer managed to secure that, I think if he hasn't got the job already, that would certainly secure it for him. But it was a really disappointing display from them, wasn't it?
Secure it for Van Gaal.
True, that is true.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'll only say one point on this because I didn't watch most of this match, to be fair. But the bit I did see, and I am sorry, I said this yesterday on Bear Me Up, it was one of the best bits of karma I've seen ever, was Diogo Dalo picks up the ball in the exact same position as where and takes that shot from the exact same area, and it hits the exact same part of whichever Wolves defender it was that it hit on Kimpembe from almost a mirror image, with Jota, not Jota, Dalo again firing it into a defender, and this time it's not given. And you see the Man United fans just erupt at that point. And this is the thing. For United, the way they've been going at times, yes, they've actually looked good. Yes, they've been encouraging. And, you know, yes, Solskjaer's gotten fine. But they've had so many instances, those small little bits of luck that have just gone their way. And when one bit doesn't, it all comes tumbling down. And we see that this is what United could possibly be. And I had a very, very big grin on my face when I saw how United were afterwards.
For me, this was United's worst performance of the season. Under Solskjaer, sorry. No doubt. But, yeah, it just shows that, in my opinion, that Solskjaer is more of a motivator. It's not a tactician. I don't want to credit him on that, because as we were talking about the internationals teams earlier, I feel it's like, and Solskjaer was a great comparison. The United team are a very cohesive unit. Solskjaer's probably made them very happy to be playing again, and they're looking forward to it.
I think that's the thing. We've described him as a motivator and not a tactician. Even the best tacticians don't get it right 100% of the time. 90% of the time, probably 95% of the time in Pep's case. As a motivator, he's not going to be able to motivate the team to a victory 100% of the time. And I think it's fair to say that against Wolves, definitely was their worst performance under him so far. He just didn't quite get them up for it. They were pretty toothless in attack. They were probably still living on the back of that amazing result against PSG. And when you've had a result that big, I think it's probably quite hard to motivate your players to get as up for a game which just isn't as big. Do you know what I mean?
Like, could you see maybe it's a United attitude now that, like, top four is well within their grasp, even after we beat them, but, like, they've still got a good, reasonable run in, I mean, other than City at home. I mean, top four is definitely on the chances now that Chelsea have sort of dropped out, and I feel, yeah.
I mean, hang on, we have been given this quite a lot of United bashing for this fixture. Just to be fair, Wolves did play amazingly.
They were fantastic.
They were really good in this. And it is a point, like, they have been kind of overlooked at times this season, because the fact they play well against the big teams, but then they fluff it up against the small teams you expect them to win. And maybe that's, you know, we talked already quite a bit about this idea of motivation. Maybe that's part of it. They don't seem to get themselves pumped up as much for those games. But to be fair to them, in this game, they were really... Jota and Jimenez have been... they've been a terrific strike partnership for them. They've been playing more with just those two up top rather than the 3-4-3 they played a lot in the Championship. And it has worked. They have looked like a very strong team, and they will, I'm pretty certain, I'll say this now, they will overturn Brighton, obviously, who are their opponents for it. And I think it will be them and City in the final, which could be a really good game.
Controversial, but if they keep Nuno in the next couple of years, I feel they could get into the top six spots.
Not a chance.
They've been
very good against Man United. Yes, they've probably been the best team outside of the top six, but they have been so lucky with injuries. So lucky. Not one of their first team players has been injured all season.
No, that's true.
It's honestly astounding how lucky they've been.
How long can they keep as well? The calibre of player.
And Jimenez is only on loan. They might not even get him.
I know they've lost against small teams, but if you've seen, like, Arsenal were lucky to get a point, Chelsea were lucky to get a point at home, and City, they've got more points than... against the top six, when, like, Spurs, United, Chelsea this season.
Leicester won the Premier League 3 years ago, and they're not a top six team. Like, it's just...
I mean, they've got the quality. They've got the investment. It's been a big question of clubs underneath the top six, whether they could keep these players. But if it works at Wolves, then, like, I mean, I could definitely see a team in the current top six falling out and Wolves being in there to replace
them.
Spurs.
Spurs is the one.
You think?
Spurs. I would be more inclined to say Arsenal or Chelsea. Okay. I would genuinely go. I think Chelsea could drop out.
But it depends. You don't have Rob Holding.
Arsenal's the big question with Arsenal is we can't financially take the hit of missing out the Champions League. And if Emery gets his resources, if we get into the Champions League, because we spend what's in the club, we don't spend, the owner doesn't spend his money. And if Arsenal get this investment, then they can maintain it. But I do see your point about Arsenal could dropping down. But nah, I think that's a bit harsh.
I know we're obviously going to get on to top four in a bit. But another way, obviously, I know your concern, Menji, is to will Arsenal finish, you know, in the top four? Will it possibly be fifth? I mean, you have to remember, you do have the backdoor route in, which is the Europa League. You do have to get over Napoli first, but you could end up winning it if you went in that way. And obviously, that is another route in for you. So that is a plan B option.
For the first time ever, I mean, it sounds cocky, but I'm not scared.
This is about to be stupid.
I'm not scared of Chelsea.
Not as stupid as I thought.
Okay. I mean,
even I'm not scared of Chelsea.
I mean, at the Emirates this season, goodness. I was totally sure we'd win that match. Even the 3-2 when it was the first two games of Emery, and we had the spell where we missed three open goals and probably could have scored six by the end of the first half. But, like, I mean, Napoli's a big test, which we'll get onto later, but, like, I mean, the semi-finals, if we get there, is certainly winnable. And Chelsea, I mean, I feel they're the worst team in the top six, and Arsenal should like definitely come into that final with confidence should we get there.
On to Wolves, though, I'd just like to say, just quickly, it's not going to be a couple of seasons' time, top six. This is going to be a long slog, because financially they are nowhere near as big as those clubs in the top six. It's all about finances once you get up there. Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs, they're probably about, I haven't looked at the stats, but they're probably all about twice as big as them financially. And so that's a very big barrier to come across. Yeah. And there's no real way of they just need to stay in the Premier League and invest well. Maybe if they go through investing in youth products and then maybe selling them on to try and get that kind of money. But they're not going to be a club that can just go in, buy really big players and then compete suddenly.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, at the minute, it's, I think Callum touched on it on View from the Stands an hour or so ago, is the Jorge Mendes effect at the minute. That's the reason they've been able to attract
the
calibre of players. I mean, the fact that they had Ruben Neves playing in the Championship is just a bit of a joke. But can they maintain this for years to come? Like, I just don't think so. Like,
the whole thing is a rather, and for the sake of libel, I will not go into what I think of it really, but it is
illegal.
The main issue is the fact that what happens is Mendes' company has an investment stake within the overall arching management club that is in charge of Wolves, and that company, by versa, has an investment which is, by chance, who'd have thought it, the exact same investment amount within Mendes' one. It's almost like the two are directly interlinked, and what happens is Mendes puts
allegedly.
His client... Well, yeah, this is all thanks to Der Spiegel, we should highlight from here. These are all the claims that came out from Der Spiegel, which we are working on, which is quite interesting. But what's essentially been happening, according to these leaks from it, is that Mendes will basically tell his clients, like, okay, you're doing okay at this club, you know, Benfica or Porto, because, as we've noticed, quite a lot of them do appear to be Portuguese. And he'll then say, you could actually get a better move, a better wage in the Premier League, and also it's a better stage for you to make an advertising for yourself to then move on to another top-tier club. They'll then put in a transfer request that goes through. Mendes's company will take commission from Wolves as that comes in. Say they're buying someone for like 40 million. Mendes takes like a £10 million commission from that. By a very odd chance, that 10 million then somehow winds up back in Wolves. So it turns out they are spending... It's sort of like they're undercutting the market through this. And it's a very, very dubious way in which they're doing it. It's almost on par with Red Bull's horrible way in which, you know, someone goes to... From RB... Well, for example, there's an American player. I can't remember his surname, but he's just gone from Red Bull New York to Red Bull Salzburg, and it was like a £7 million move, but that was just within the Red Bull consortium. So it's basically just like passing the cash from one part to another. It's a very, very iffy way in which this is working. I know Joe's saying like financially it's difficult for them to compete, but if they're using these not underhanded but sort of loopholes in the system which we have, then that could be the way in which they're going to, you know, propel themselves up very quickly back into this race, but then it could all fall apart.
Yeah,
that's the hopefully for the sake of good football.
Okay, yeah, we discussed this. I mean, obviously, Jez has just informed me on this, but like, I feel my argument ends when, like, I mean, City searching for a Fernandinho replacement, will they go for Ruben Neves, and like, would that mean the spell the end for Wolves? But I feel, I just feel,
Rice,
I just feel,
I think,
but like, but... any, I mean. It's not easy to get hyped up against the top six sides, but Wolves have completely been an absolute nuisance for us this season. And if they could up their performances against the smaller clubs, I mean, they lost to like Palace at home this season, which I didn't expect. I still feel that they could gain significant ground.
And just to, go on, Jez, sorry.
No, I was going to say that his point. They have been a thorn in the side for top six, which is really annoying when your last game of the season, when you're in a title race, is against blooming Wolves.
Anfield, you're going to win.
I think people are really sort of.
I mean, fortunately, they'll have one eye on the FA Cup final.
Yeah, I think
they've
obviously done very well in the FA Cup. That performance against Man United was very good, but I still think they're being overhyped a bit. I mean, they're only 2 points ahead of West Ham, I don't think people realise. 5 or 6, or it might be a few more ahead of Everton. I mean, they haven't nailed down seventh spot. I think Watford are only 1 point behind them or something as well. Who are also in the semi-final, and we're not giving them anywhere near enough credit. I mean, they're not that good. You say they've done well against Arsenal, they've beaten Manchester United. So have West Ham. We beat Man United, we beat Arsenal. I mean, Everton beat Chelsea at the weekend. We drew against Chelsea.
West Ham taking the points away from home. Wolves have come to Chelsea, should have won. Should have come to Arsenal and won. And Mkhitaryan's attempted cross ended up going in. They went to United under Mourinho and drew. But Wolves have been.
You don't have to beat the top six to get in there. I mean, Arsenal have been proven that for years. They don't beat the top six, exactly. But they still get in there.
But just
the Emirates is just a fortress, you know.
Just obviously not.
Final thing about the FA Cup. Obviously, in the semi-final draw, we've got Wolves, Watford, Brighton and Manchester City. Only one team within the Premier League's top four. Now, I'm going to turn to you, Ollie, for this one. For years and years as an Everton fan, I'm been told, and the criticism that comes from pundits and what have you is, why aren't clubs like Everton taking the cup seriously when there's an opportunity there for them to push and progress and win a piece of silverware? And my response always to that has been, well, look, the competition has still been dominated by teams in the top four. You know, the last previous winners, Chelsea, Manchester United, Arsenal, have won it on multiple occasions in recent years. They've been part of that top four bubble. Is this year maybe the start of the fall of those top clubs when it comes to the FA Cup and the rise of slightly more mid-table clubs? Or are we just looking at a bit of an anomaly, would you say?
How does it make you feel as a West Ham fan? It's hard to say, really, because I'm glad you've come to me with this question, because it's been something that I felt very strongly about for a long time. I cannot understand why any club wouldn't take the FA Cup seriously. Outside of the Premier League, it's the biggest cup in England. I mean, we've only seen Pep Guardiola has obviously taken it seriously. He's played pretty much a first team in every round, even against some of these lower league opposition. And it's stupid. What is the point in like saving your players for a Premier League game if you're not even going to... I suppose if you're... In West Ham's case, they might say, oh, we're trying to finish seventh so that we can get into the first round of the Europa League qualifying. But,
fair play.
I mean, yeah, it's just ridiculous. And it's quite hard to say, really, because you say, oh, is this the change? Like, is it not going to be the big four at this stage of the competition every season? It's hard to say because, I mean, Liverpool just sacrificed they sacrificed the FA Cup, really, didn't they?
Oh, yeah,
I mean, they play. I mean, who was that 16-year-old centre-back or whatever?
The Dutch kid as well. Yeah,
I mean, so they obviously said, oh, we care more about the Premier League. And I suppose that's understandable in one sense. But the FA, other than the Carabao, it's the easiest trophy you're ever going to win. I mean, you only need to win 5 or 6 games.
Wigan and winning it was an anomaly then.
I mean, when Arsenal won it, you've won it, what, three times
three
in the
times
last
in
thing?
The last four.
I think it was the first time you won it. You had the easiest run of fixtures
I've
ever seen.
Liverpool at home in the 13-14 season.
Okay, well, the second
Tottenham
one then.
Okay.
When you played the two...
Is Aaron Ramsey an Arsenal legend?
No.
Stay clear.
Okay, 16-17, we might have had Sutton United and stuff, but we beat Man City and Chelsea, the Premier League winners in the final, so it did get hard. Yeah, I do understand your point, but in terms of the question,
I suppose it's a good question to ask you as well, Ben. Like, would you sacrifice the FA Cup for top four?
This stage, not a few years ago, but it was top four and FA Cup. But this time, yes.
But is that because you've won it so much recently?
partly, but the thing is, Arsenal can't financially take the hit of missing out on the Champions League because.
But put that put all that to one side. As a fan, right? Would you rather see your team because you're not going to win the Champions League? Right,
but it's the money. It's the money. Spurs got more money for. They obviously it's a Champions League. They got more money for getting into the round of 16 against Juventus.
What do you invest the money in? You invest the money in buying players to win trophies.
Arsenal did for getting into the semi-final of the Europa League with Atletico Madrid.
But purely from
a fan's
point of view, watching your club, would you rather see your club get to Wembley and win a trophy than get to the Champions League and get knocked out in the?
Look at us. We've finished fifth and sixth in the last few years. We've certainly been the banter club off the top six. We need to get back into the Champions League and stop playing in the Europa League. It is depressing.
Here's a question, just following on from what you said, James. It obviously happened to Wigan a few years ago. Would you prefer to win the FA Cup and get relegated from the Premier League?
100%.
Or stay up? Because I think all their fans agree. Yeah. That's the best moment in their club's history.
Every Wigan fan always says that. Like when we speak, I've spoken to them because obviously I grew up near there. They always, when I've met them, they go, yeah, I was perfectly happy to take relegation, but we won the FA Cup. It's that one day, otherwise, you know, it could have been semi-finals, great, what a great run, and we stay up just by the skin of our teeth, and it's another kind of mediocre season. Yeah. If you've got something by the end of it, and if you're a club that size, maybe not a top six club, because that's the thing, before Benji tries to snatch the mic back, if you're a top six club, and you're thinking about it from this point of view, for us, when we're looking at it, we go, we want the cup, but also, you know, top four is what we ultimately want because it then means you can get into the next tier of competition that you want to compete in. And that's where clubs should be aiming. If you're a club, you know, maybe below, you know, the bracket of Everton and West Ham, where I know for you guys it's sort of the pundits do keep banding on saying you guys should be competing. Look at Leicester, for example. When they went out, Puel got the absolute kicked out of him by the media because of the fact of and they were saying, you know, he rested his team. What was he doing? You know, it didn't make sense. And if you're then a club, maybe like a Burnley, for example, and if Burnley had got through semi-final, Burnley would probably go, yeah, you know what? To hell with the Premier League. We're going to go all out for the league. It's that sort of weird dynamic because there is the advantage, I suppose, if you do get relegated now, you can say, well, we'll depend on maybe the parachute payments to help us, but that's another kettle of fish entirely.
Well, I think for Arsenal and Spurs, they're in a really unique situation where the top four money, they reinvest it, but one, not cleverly, and two, they don't have the owners to back them. They're never going to be able to finance. They're not in at least 5 years' time, I think, financially be able to compete with City, Liverpool and United. They're not going to challenge for the Premier League. They're not going to challenge for the Champions League. Why not win a few FA Cups and finish fifth? Who really cares?
I've got to admit, there has been a change in my answer in terms of 2 years. 2 years ago when Spurs finished second and Arsenal finished fifth and won the FA Cup, I was bantering Spurs fans saying, I'd rather have trophies, I'd rather have this. But it's obviously great to see your club win trophies, but at this stage when we've had this fall, and I know we're not going to win the Champions League, but at least reap the benefits of the money that we get in, because honestly,
can I just ask, what are the benefits of the money? So that you can
Arsenal
sign better players?
Yes.
To win trophies?
Eventually, yes.
So that's better.
The
whole point
is why not win the trophies anyway?
I know. It's going to be a long chat about fan identity and the fact that Arsenal fans think that.
Basically,
in terms of we think we have a right to be challenging for the Premier League. But I feel Arsenal need to get to the stage where they rebuild, they get the Champions League, they spend this money on players, and then they compete in the Premier League.
I heard what you just said, and it was interesting how when Benji was saying to win trophies, you said and Ollie was saying, what about winning the FA Cup, and you said the better trophies. Is the FA Cup now, I know its reputation has changed significantly over the last 20-25 years or so, is the FA Cup now put in a bracket of trophies alongside the Carabao Cup?
100%. Arsenal are the biggest examples of this exact phenomenon. People don't value the FA Cup anymore. It's not a big enough trophy.
Arsenal, I'm going to interrupt you right there. Liverpool take the FA Cup about as seriously, I'm not going to complete that simile, but you can't Arsenal Arsenal have won 13 FA Cups. They're the most successful FA Cup team. If anyone knows about FA Cup success, it's Arsenal, because we've had the most success. We don't need to prove our point by winning more.
Choice to play it. I didn't pick the team. How is this my fault that Liverpool aren't challenging for the FA Cup?
Liverpool got knocked out by West Brom and Wolves. West Brom last season.
I remember the trophy. Just take it.
I'll tell you what I think we should do. What I think we should do, because I think we're all in unanimous agreement that sort of the prestigious nature of the FA Cup has definitely been dampened by clubs like Liverpool just sacrificing it for the sake of the Premier League. I think they should get rid of the Carabao Cup.
Yes,
because
nobody cares about it.
If a team wins it, all that happens is that other teams joke that it doesn't matter. I mean, like, if Arsenal had won the Carabao Cup, Tottenham fans would have been joking that it didn't matter. Because, let's be honest, it doesn't. I think you only need to win five games or something in that. For the most part, like, you don't have any of the lower league clubs playing in it and whatnot. It would also stop with, like, fixture congestion, which all these clubs have been complaining about. Because the FA Cup doesn't start till December. Well, for the big teams, anyway, for the Premier League clubs. Obviously, you've got the lower league clubs, but it's because they play the Carabao up until Christmas. Why can we not just start FA Cup game fixtures in like October? The lower league clubs can play theirs start of August when the rest of their calendar year or when the rest of their domestic season starts. And I mean, I just think it would be better. It would mean that it was the only other trophy other than your league that you could win, so people would actually want to win it. I mean, it just seems so stupid to have two. Like, it's just a money making thing at the end of the day, isn't it? Like, I mean, they're not going to get rid of it, but they should do.
I mean, on a technicality point of view, the Premier, well, the top tier team's only joining at round three, so it does go on a little bit beforehand, which is one point. But I agree with you in the sense that the Carabao Cup, or whatever latest name it's got from its branding, because that's the thing as well, like you said, it is a massive marketing money tool for it. The last time I think it actually sort of mattered was when you had Brighton versus Swansea as that final. That was the last time we saw two teams that really don't have much to play for in a season actually get that far and think, yeah, you know what, we're going to make a bit of a day out of this. I mean, that was the season where Swansea had Michu, who went blooming supernova. That's a real throwback. But, you know, that's how far off we're talking about. Sense that was, I think, probably the last time teams took it seriously, because since then it's become a back and forth really between Chelsea and City mostly, is to sort of see who can win it the most number of times. It's usually one which either a Mourinho team or
Liverpool, the most successful Carabao Cup.
Yeah, but not in recent years. Not in recent years.
No, but I valued it when I went.
Oh, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
I was absolutely gutted for weeks after that. just because some people on the internet don't value it doesn't mean actual fans don't value it.
When you're there and the prospect of winning a trophy, especially as an Evertonian who hasn't seen his team win a trophy, this is why I find the disrespect towards the FA Cup, it really annoys me. Especially annoys me when my club disrespects it as well, the teams it sometimes puts out. Because, like we were saying about Wigan, a trophy is the be all and end all. Just to say that you were there or that you saw your team lift a piece of silverware, it's, and even teams, for example, like Brighton going to the semi-final, right, the fact that they're making the trip down Wembley Way for the first time, I think that's actually Brighton's first visit to the new Wembley. It's something that their supporters will be able to look back on, win, lose or draw, that they were there and to experience it. So imagine the feeling if they go on and win the cup. My last question about the FA Cup is, who do we think is going to win it out of those four teams?
City, Manchester, but hopefully City, Wolves.
The favourites, yeah?
Yeah, well, we have to say so. But like, hopefully Wolves can win it. Because, you know, I'm a big Wolves fan here.
it will be City. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will be.
It will be City as well, yeah. No.
To carry on my theme from yesterday, if City can emulate Bayer Leverkusen, that would be spectacular, and I would go with Wolves because for the fact that they would come second in all the competitions they and obviously they've won.
City win the quadruple, I think just football needs to restart completely. There should never ever be a scenario where one team wins all the trophies available. Yeah. Just stop. Scrap every team. Start again.
I just want to make a point about it before. I don't want to come across as I'm disrespecting the FA Cup. I love it. It's a great competition. I mean, it's the only trophy we've won in the last 15 years. But it's great seeing your team win it. And yeah, nothing brings more pride and joy than seeing your team win a trophy. So yeah.
The thing is, I actually don't think Arsenal get enough credit. Yes, I know they've said they had quite an easy run in.
Don't you dare mention Aaron Ramsey.
I'm not going to say that, but like, it is a big trophy. It should be a big trophy.
It should be.
Every club in the whole of England, and only one team can win it. Like, why is that not a big thing?
Okay,
like,
going back to one thing, just very quick, because I know when we keep going to it. I think everyone here does respect the FA Cup. We all do. The reason why we're even on this topic is because there is a thing that when you're saying like teams like Liverpool will sack it off for something else. The problem is, from a Liverpool's point of view for it, yes, it's something which we would like to win if circumstances have been permitting. Yeah. If we weren't in a title fight with the best team that the Premier League has gone up has seen in recent years, then we would probably have given it more credit for it. If we weren't, you know, last year, like 2 years ago, if we weren't trying to get back into top four, because for Anfield, the most special nights you ever see in Anfield are European nights. And those hadn't been happening since since Brendan Rodgers' sort of third season, which wasn't even special for that. That was what Liverpool was trying to get, that just build that level of consistency. And it meant, unfortunately, and there was a lot, I think, of players probably within the coaching staff, especially for people like Klopp, you know, it is a bit of a... it's a real gut punch for yourself when you're thinking we're going to have to just not play this. We're going to have to sack it off because we have a bigger target which we've got to aim for. And I think that... it gets blown out of proportion a little bit when people are saying, you know, Liverpool sacked off the FA Cup, so it's divided. No, one club said we have to sort out our priorities, and unfortunately, at this point, we can't put the FA Cup as top of our priorities, so we have to focus on something else. It doesn't mean that the other 19 teams in the Premier League have to do the exact same thing, and that's why I think, you know, when people say, oh, the Premier League devalues it, not at all. It's just that each club has their own priorities, what they're aiming for. City want to win everything under the sun. United were chasing that ever since Ollie came in. They were chasing the FA Cup because in their minds, the dream scenario would be, you know, Ollie gets them a decent run in Europe, finishes top four and wins FA Cup, and that would be for them, you know, a fairy tale thing for them. You know, I'm sure every other club, you know, had Arsenal not come up against Man United that early, they probably would have maybe tried to give it a bit more of a push than they unfortunately had the opportunity to. There's a lot of times when the Premier League gets slammed for devaluing other competitions purely because of the fact that each team has its own priorities in that season, and I don't like it when the fact that everyone goes, well, X club then obviously doesn't care about it. Sorry, a bit of a rant there.
Do you want to make a point, Benjamin?
Oh, you could have not lost to West Brom in the third round at Anfield last season. That's all I'm going to say. But I'm joking. But like, to be honest, like, look, I completely agree with Jez's points. It's right now Arsenal in that Liverpool stage where we're trying to get back in the Champions League, and that's the priority.
Well, fascinating chat there about the FA Cup, lads. Before we take a quick break, I just wanted to touch upon the relegation battle at the moment in the Premier League. Obviously, Crystal Palace are one team that I wanted to talk about. They were involved in the quarterfinals and defeated 2-1 away to Watford. At the minute, there is just 7 points separating 13th and 18th. Palace find themselves just 5 points clear of the relegation zone. And this has led to some question marks over Roy Hodgson. Is he, Jez, underachieving with the squad which he's got available to him, or are Palace in the position where they kind of that's where they should be, if you know what I mean? Because 5 points away, I didn't think that they were that close to the relegation zone, if I was being honest.
No, I didn't until you just said that then. I don't... It's difficult to say what... because. Again, it's back to the question of fan identity that we come to, that we seem to be going on a rolling revolving door on recently. It's a question of what was, you know, Palace's objectives for this season. Did they want to, you know, break into the top 10 and, you know, lock down maybe like 10th place or something like that? They've got talented players, obviously, in that squad. You know, you look at Zaha, Batshuayi now in on loan. Milivojević is a decent midfielder. Max Meyer has not been anywhere near as good as everyone thought he was going to be. Obviously, Wan-Bissaka's broken through this year. And then you've got some players like Saka, for example, that just sort of seem to hang around. And
Townsend, obviously, as well.
Yeah, I forgot about Townsend. But, you know, they have got talent in that squad. I think for them to be down there, it's more a question of they're such a rollercoaster team, in the sense they'll have one good week where, you know, for example, they'll beat either they'll nearly beat Chelsea, I think they nearly did, and then they'll beat Man City, and they'll have, you know, real big upswings, and then they'll hit a real big trough, because that's what Hodgson is. Hodgson can set you up for a season. It's never going to be a brilliant season, but it'll set you up to do okay. And for Palace, just very quick, I think probably to be so close to that relegation zone is a worry. I would say probably for them, an average season is somewhere around, I don't know, 11th to 13th is roughly where I'd say they would likely finish. But to be that close, yeah, that is a bit of a worry for them.
I suppose, Joe, for Palace, that they're in a difficult position, those the doubters of Hodgson, because obviously what happened with Frank de Boer last season, I think it was last season, he came in, obviously... Pardew had left. They brought in De Boer to try and implement a new style of football, move Palace onto the next level, whatever that means. And it didn't work, so they went back to Hodgson. I suppose they're in a difficult place now, because if they get rid of Hodgson, it would be to bring in somebody like De Boer, a bit more of a progressive type. But they've, you know, in the last 18 months, that didn't work. So if you were in the shoes of Crystal Palace, would you persist with Hodgson, or do you think they require somebody else to get the best out of those really talented players which Jez has just alluded to?
If I'm in a position of power at Crystal Palace, I'm thinking, firstly, I don't think Hodgson is doing too badly. I don't think he's really underachieving with the team at all. But if you want to push the squad on to a higher position, I mean, I'm looking at the table. In terms of better squads, I say they have a slightly better squad than Newcastle. But apart from that, I think all the teams above them probably have a better squad than them. So if you want to implement the Frank de Boer style football with a different manager, you've got to be prepared to bring in the players that will suit that system. You can't expect the same players who are suited to one system to then be able to play a completely different one over one summer. So you're in a really terrible situation with Palace. I think we touched on this ages ago. How do you push on from lower mid table towards higher mid table? And I'm genuinely stuck. I would maybe gamble on a new manager, just because what's the heart? I mean, if they get relegated, I mean, I don't know. I have a really weird philosophy about this. If they get relegated, what's the Championship's a better league to be in anyway? Being lower mid table in the Premier League can't be that exciting. I mean, I'm really torn. Yeah, they need it. If they want to push on, they need a proper investment with the manager who wants to play a particular style and need those players to fit that style.
And another team, Ollie, that are involved in the relegation battle that kind of been overlooked a little bit, they currently sit 17th, actually, is Burnley. They're on the back of four straight losses. It's the second highest amount of goals conceded in the Premier League, just behind Huddersfield in that regard. I mean, what's gone wrong for Burnley this season? Because last year, obviously, qualified for the Europa League, lots of scalps at Turf Moor, obviously played a very pragmatic, direct style of football, which worked. But this season, it's gone completely wrong for them. And can you see them being sucked into it?
I mean, I think last season was somewhat of an anomaly. I think they finished seventh with a minus goal difference or something, which has never happened before. And it was like you were touching on earlier, they never seemed to play particularly good football, but just managed to sort of stay in matches. Used to grab a couple of late goals, got quite lucky in some matches. But I think the difference for me between Crystal Palace and Burnley is that, like we already said, Crystal Palace have a somewhat decent squad. Maybe not quite as good as like a West Ham or an Everton or a Leicester or a Wolves. But I mean, it's up there. They've got Zaha, who's one of the best players outside of the top six. And in that sense, a manager like Hodgson obviously did well last season, but they perhaps need someone who can take them that step further. Burnley, on the other hand, probably after Huddersfield, have the worst squad in the Premier League. I mean, it's truly horrific. I mean, they brought back in
Cardiff.
Peter Crouch, didn't they? In January. I mean, I think that goes to show they've got Ashley Barnes, who I think is Chris Wood, who's just a Championship striker at best, but manages to pop up with a goal every now and then. So in that sense, I think Sean Dyche really is doing as good a job as he can do with that squad. They're sitting just outside the relegation places at the minute. I would back them to just about stay up, and anything above that is a bonus. Obviously, the Burnley fans will be a bit disappointed given how well they did last season, but at the end of the day, you look at their players and they really can't expect to be doing much better. So that's where I draw the line between Crystal Palace, who have the potential to improve with the squad that they've got, and Burnley, who are pretty much doing as well as they could be doing.
I mean, one thing I will just very quickly say with it, Sean Dyche has this, I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I know he has this phenomenal ability, along with Lucien Favre, to just break expected goals. They go completely against how much they're... I mean, Favre's Dortmund were, I can't remember, at one point this season, they were on almost double the amount they should be. And that was nearly the case with what was happening at Burnley last season. They do have that ability to just somehow almost overperform, but it's... the consistency of the fact that Dyche keeps on doing it, which is frankly amazing. One of the things which probably with Burnley, you know, it's not an inspiring squad. It's often joked as being a very Brexity squad, is what people like to sort of lamp it, even though actually hilariously Bournemouth have the most number of British players in the Premier League that I learned the other day. But what Burnley have done a lot is they've invested a huge amount of that actually into their training complex. Yeah. I think they have probably one of I think it's maybe like one of the top three best training complex in terms of the amount of like modern stuff they have there. I think obviously City are top, and probably someone else is second. I'm not sure who, but I think it's like they have the third most, because they're trying to basically establish that long term ability to just almost remain a Premier League club. And if they drop back down, we saw it a few seasons back where they went up, they got relegated almost instantly. They stuck with Dyche and they then came back up, what was it, 2 years later? So yeah, they're a team which does, like Joe's saying, possibly for Burnley, relegation might not be the worst scenario for them. They drop down, they might lose, a couple of the older lads, getting some, possibly young players that could fill the gap for the club for a fair few years that aren't exceptional, that aren't brilliant, Trippier, for example, is one of them, and they've got players like Jack Cork, for example, who they're never fantastic, but they're okay players for that level, and that's all that Burnley needs to be. Burnley just needs to be constantly, for their mind, they're always going to be a lot in the view of, we just need to be at a certain level and we're okay. We don't ever really, like last year I think was a fluke for them, whilst Palace just, like Ollie said, they have the potential but they never seem to capitalise on it.
Yeah, just the last thing I'd like to say on it is just, again, with the expected goals, it was completely the other way for Burnley as well, in terms of they conceded the most shots in the league last year. They were just bombarded the entire game because Sean Dyche played a system where he would encourage other teams to shoot from far out, and as soon as you work out that tactically, they are completely undone, and we've seen that this season often. And I think, as Ollie said, they're a championship team in the Premier League, and they are very lucky. The only reason why they're not in the bottom three is because Fulham are terrible.
Go on, Benjamin.
Yeah, it's all right, thanks. I was going to say, Burnley, I agree with Ollie, Burnley are going to do enough to stay up. I feel it's going to be, well, obviously Fulham and Huddersfield. I feel Cardiff may, just drop out, but like, the Burnley squad isn't that exciting, but I mean, Sean Dyche, you have to give him credit, because I mean, he's got the best out of what they could do, really. It was a miracle how they finished seventh. But no, I feel Newcastle and like Palace will, and these teams like that will just pull away and they'll stay up. It seems certainty.
Yeah, so the general impression I'm getting from you lads is that whilst Palace and Burnley have had not the greatest seasons, that they're going to do enough to survive, yeah?
Palace
will.
Yeah, Palace will.
I think so. I think both of them.
I thought Cardiff could like be inspired off like the unfortunate loss of Salah. They started to get these results.
I think Cardiff have already exceeded expectations.
They did start.
Yeah. If they go down,
no one's really
going to.
Southampton are pretty bad. I wouldn't be surprised if they went down instead.
I mean, I think Southampton probably are just in about enough position to stay up. I mean, Cardiff do have a game in hand on Burnley, and I can't remember who it is. I know they've got a really nasty run in, but if they win that, they're on 31 points. Burnley then drop into the relegation zone, and then it could happen. I mean, personally, those teams, yeah, Huddersfield are gone, Fulham are gone, and I would quite, in a way, because I don't like Sean Dyche football, wouldn't mind seeing Burnley go down. But in a way, also for the fact of Neil Warnock's consistency of never keeping a team in the Premier League, he might just think at the end of it, well, I've always got relegated, so I might as well carry on the trend.
Yeah. Said he doesn't like being in the Premier League anyway. But I think Southampton Burnley just come off the back of two results against Spurs, where they just won 2-1. Like, I feel that's pretty big for a team's confidence when you beat a top six side, and I feel that they do have the quality to just about stay up. Yeah,
right. So Palace and Burnley, not the best seasons for them, but Palace we're pretty convinced are going to stay afloat this season, whereas Burnley, still question marks remain on them. It's going to be really interesting.
Palace deserve to stay up after just beating City away.
True. Still question marks over Burnley
and the Liverpool performance,
and it is going to be really interesting, the relegation battle between now and the end of the season.
This is URN.
Welcome back to the last part of the Saturday Sports Show, joined by Benji, Joe, Ollie and Jez in the studio. We've talked about the FA Cup, reflections on England and the future of the Three Lions. And we've also touched upon relegation with specific focus on two teams who were involved in the battle to survive in the Premier League. Now we're going to finish by looking at the top four, the race for the top four, as well as the title race. At the minute, the top six stands as this. Tottenham find themselves third on 61 points, Arsenal fourth on 60, United fifth on 58 points, and Chelsea sixth on 57 points. Chelsea, obviously, with a disappointing defeat to Everton last weekend. Yes, just drop that one in there. but still
happy Everton.
I am, yeah. We've got small victories. We've got to cling to them. They're only 4 points, 3 points off the top four, Chelsea. So it's going to go down to the wire, I would suggest. And I'll turn to you, Benji, because obviously you're, as an Arsenal fan, at the heart of this. Where do you see this going now, the top four?
I'll cover Chelsea. So the points suggest that Chelsea are not out of it, but the Europa League ties that they've got, Slavia Prague, they're in the semi-finals. And then once they get there, it's Benfica or Eintracht, who are two good sides, but I still see Chelsea getting to final and prioritising the Europa League. And plus, with their run-in, they've got to go to United away and Liverpool away. So I think Chelsea will abandon the Premier League, finish sixth. As for Spurs, you have to see, we were having a discussion about this like earlier separately. I mean, it remains to be seen what their priorities will be. I mean, they've got, if they beat City in the semi-final at Spurs, which is the first leg, could they go on to the Etihad with confidence and try and get into that semi-final? Also, with Spurs, the reason why I think ultimately, as an Arsenal fan, I have to be an optimist, but Arsenal and United will get it in no particular order, third or fourth, is that Spurs do have to go to Liverpool away, and they have the most horrendous record at Anfield. I can't remember the last time they've won there. And as for Spurs, they've also got United away. Not United away, who is it?
They got City away,
which, I mean, as you see now, Spurs and City have drawn each other. It remains to see their priorities, but you'd have to back City at the Etihad to win that. And the only thing against Arsenal, in my opinion, is Wolves away, but United have got that fixture too. It's just so many ifs and buts.
I think United have probably the worst run-in, personally. They've got Watford at home, Wolves away, West Ham at home, Everton away, City at home, Chelsea at home, Huddersfield away, Cardiff at home. So like, there's a solid five or six games in there in which they could feasibly struggle. Right, I think Spurs is running, apart from those two games, should be six wins.
It should be easy.
Should be enough.
But based on this, you can't, like, based on Spurs' recent defeats to Burnley and Southampton, which you just said 100% Spurs wins, you can't really just say Spurs are going to win. You can't say any team's going to win their games. I mean, Arsenal's away record is diabolical. I mean, but like, we, and the thing about United is they've got five home games. Yes, they've been better away under Solskjaer, but five home games, and we've got five away games, and Arsenal's away record, it just really puts it into question. I'm really nervous about this.
The one thing I'd throw in though about Spurs is obviously they're going to be moving into the new stadium in April for I think the first game is against Crystal Palace, and we saw how long it took them, Ollie, to adjust, and you know this is a West Ham fan actually, how long it took West Ham to adjust to the Olympic Stadium. Spurs had that problem at Wembley last season. Is the new stadium coming at a really awkward time for Spurs, in that it's right in the kind of heat of this race for the top four? They've got this bedding in period and it comes at a time where they need to start picking up results, really.
I don't think so, actually. Mm-hmm. I know you touched on West Ham and it's an interesting point, but I think it was more the fact that the Olympic Stadium just not only didn't suit West Ham's style of play, but also it was very difficult for the fans, what with all the trouble that was going on and how far away they are from the action, obviously. I'm sure we've all seen the photos of Tottenham Stadium, and it doesn't matter if we're West Ham or an Arsenal fan, you can't dispute that it's going to be one of the best stadiums in England. It looks pretty phenomenal, and I'm sure it's going to be a sellout. And I think that's actually going to help them in some way. Yeah. I kind of think that Tottenham I kind of think that Tottenham have had their bad patch now. They've obviously, the last sort of 6 weeks or so, ever since I think it was that first leg against Dortmund when they won 3-0, they've had a bit of a shoddy patch. But now I think most of their players back to full fitness, Kane firing on all cylinders again. Ali, especially for England yesterday, looked back to his best, which was very pleasing to see. So I can't really see them finishing outside of the top four. But however much I'd like to dispute what Ben said, I actually think his logic is pretty sound when it comes to Chelsea in the Europa League. I think Man United's, I think their foot might be coming off the accelerator a bit. They obviously were on a very good run of form. I think concentration is definitely going to turn to the Champions League. It could be a similar situation to Chelsea under Di Matteo, I think, all those years ago now, where they've got a very good chance in the Champions League. And Barcelona, despite what people might think, are definitely beatable. So they're going to be prioritising that. And I think Arsenal probably have the best run-in as well. So I think I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm going to go with Tottenham in third and Arsenal in fourth in terms of finishing Champions League places. I can't know.
I'm just going to turn to just moving slightly above those four teams onto the title race between first and second, Liverpool and Manchester City. Jez and Joe, obviously, you're both in the thick of it as Liverpool fans. A narrow victory for you last weekend away to Fulham, but a victory nonetheless, which has put you at 2 points clear, am I right in saying, at the minute?
Yeah, at the moment.
At the moment. How do you see this going in terms of Liverpool's fixture list as opposed to City? City, I know I've got to go to United. I'm trying to think in terms of tricky away games for Liverpool. Are there that many to come, or
away?
You've got
tricky ones at home.
Spurs and Chelsea to come, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got five in the running. We've got five home games, which, given our Anfield form, could be key. So it's Tottenham is the next match for Liverpool on the 31st of March. Followed by then Southampton away, then the first UCL leg against Porto, then Chelsea at home, then the second UCL leg against Porto. So that could have an influence on how that Porto tie goes. Then it's Cardiff away, Liverpool then at home to Huddersfield, and then the last away game for Liverpool is then a trip to St James's Park, and then it's Wolves at home.
Do you not find, because obviously having Chelsea and Spurs to come on paper difficult games, do you not think those visits to Southampton and Cardiff could be a bit tricky? I know on paper that you've got a far superior team, but those two teams are going to be fighting for the death for the bottom of the league, Joe. So.
Yeah, I completely agree with that analysis in terms of Liverpool have never had really an issue with trying to get themselves up for a really big game like the Chelsea, like the Spurs. We won a reasonable amount of those games this season. We won a lot of those games last season. It is the Fulham, the West Ham, the Leicester, the smaller-ish, you would say, type teams where you can't. Klopp is struggling to motivate his players when they've just come off the back of playing high-quality Champions League games against Bayern Munich or whoever it's been, PSG, Napoli, etc. You're then having to go to Southampton to play against some lower league quality players, and so for those players that dream of the Champions League, like Salah, for example, he's going to struggle to find himself putting 100% in when he's just put on 100% for one game, then putting himself 100% into the next game is always going to be a struggle for a team like Liverpool.
Yeah, because there's a 4-day gap between the second leg against Porto in Portugal itself before them, the Cardiff away, and by that point Cardiff will be in the thick of a relegation dogfight. They will be probably more up for it than Liverpool. I mean, it helps for Liverpool in a way that the final three games are Huddersfield at home. Huddersfield, I think, by then will be
gone. Yeah. Newcastle will be safe.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's Huddersfield, Newcastle and Wolves. Huddersfield will be... No, they. I don't think they will. Huddersfield will be just thinking about planning for next season. They already sort of seem to be in that mindset. Newcastle should be safe by then, so they might be on the beach. And also, coincidentally, the same day, Leicester are playing City. So it's two Liverpool managers, former Liverpool managers, could do Liverpool solid there. And then, obviously, Liverpool playing Wolves at Anfield on the last day of the season, with Wolves possibly already with one eye on the FA Cup final. So it's those last three are fine. It's just once we get over the Cardiff game, then it's an okay run-in. But up until then, it's still thorny for Liverpool.
I honestly think that it's just impossible to call at this stage. There's one point. There's one point in it which is effectively meaningless, because like it only takes one drop to result for the whole thing to change. There's just so many factors. Like you said, the teams in the relegation fight, they're obviously going to be up for it more. Are City going to win the FA Cup? How far are Liverpool going to get in the Champions League? Because if they go on a Champions League run, then that's going to affect their Premier League performance as well. There's obviously going to be players less fit. Are City going to beat Tottenham? What's going to happen if they don't? Then they're obviously going to be in the ascendancy. At this stage, I honestly think it's just impossible to call. I think after the quarter finals of the Champions League, we might have a better indication. But I'm so excited for it. I think this is shaping up with, obviously, there's one relegation spot still to be decided. There's the top seven, or who's going to get seventh place to be decided. There's three teams in the mix for top four, and there's two teams challenging for the title.
The race for the top ten as well, Ollie.
And the race for the top ten, of course, yeah. So I think it's really shaping up to be one of the best Premier League seasons for years. I actually remember speaking on this show last year about how last year was a bit of a write-off. We pretty much knew City had won the league in about January. Yeah, and the teams that went down, I think, for the most part, I think they were all decided before the end of the season as well. West Brom went down very, very early. So it is pleasing to see. I'm very excited, but... I couldn't call it at this stage. I really couldn't.
What I'd like to say is, I mean, Liverpool, to be honest, like, as long as they don't drop points, if they drop points, they give City leeway to lose at United and still win the league because, I mean, there is City's superior goal difference, and it could be a league decided on goal difference. Like, so Liverpool, like, all that, I'd still rather have Liverpool's run in, but City have to go to United away. And yeah, I honestly it's too close to call, really. And it's,
and just one final question before we finish, because I think this gets easily forgotten when you're kind of the pressure and the intensity of a title race. Jez and Joe, in August, when the season started, did any of you see the season which Liverpool have gone on? Because I think it's quite easy to lose track of that. The fact that you're 2 points clear at the top of the Premier League with just a handful of games to go. It's really hurting me to say all these positive things.
I'll keep doing it. I'm loving it.
Progressed far once again in the Champions League. Did you two expect this? And you must be... Regardless of the pressure and the uncertainty about the title race, you must be absolutely loving it as well at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no in terms of predictions. I predicted City to not win as comfortably as they did last season, but I think pretty much everyone predicted that. I expected Liverpool to do a lot better. I actually predicted them at the beginning of the season to come second. So in that sense, at the moment, I'm doing well. But in terms of how close it is, no way did I think it was going to be this close. I thought by now City would not be 18 or whatever it was. I thought they might be like 5 or 6 points clear and keep having the momentum, and then they'd go on to win it quite easily before the end of the season. The level of performance I saw in the first 19 games is as good as I've ever seen a Liverpool side put out, and I was really impressed. And you can, like, they've had bad moments of losing a couple of games, drawing a couple of games, but on the whole, it's been one hell of a ride. And I'd rather Liverpool be in a title race and lose out than not be in a title race at all.
Yeah, I'm basically very similar to Joe in that I thought we'd be in there. I didn't think we would be actually as close as it is. I thought a lot of people at the start of the season, everyone pretty much gave the league to City. I know one or two people optimistically said it might go to Liverpool, but well, he didn't even. But like realistically, like, everyone sort of thought that it would be City, but it was then who would be the one challenging it. And everyone did say Liverpool are the best equipped team to challenge them, and we are doing. But to challenge a team that was, you know, like Joe said, that walked the league, what was it, by 18 points last year, that turned the Premier League into league earn almost, you know, to have a team then suddenly rile back at them and keep it so there's only 1 point difference realistically when all games are played, and we're probably assuming that City would, you know, win the next one if it's 1 point on. To keep it this close, this late on the season, I never expected it to be like that. I thought the closest I was going to have to that was in that 13-14 season.
Yeah.
And to have that sort of feeling of that Russian excitement as to being this late on, and just sort of almost, you know, all the highs and lows you get with it, to have that again it's brilliant scene. I think for the Premier League itself, it is brilliant to have that.
I think that perspective is really important, and we're going to have to call it there, lads. And despite everything I've just said about Liverpool, I will still be wearing my Man City pyjamas between now
Cheers.
And now, mate. My thanks to Benji, Jez, Joe,
and Ollie for joining me in the studio today, and thank you for you listening at home. Obviously, we've got the Tuesday Sports Show and the Thursday Sports Show to tune into this week as well.
This is URN Sport.